Welcome to the session on sponsorship. My name is Rita, and I'm a sexaholic. Mike and I will be co-leaders for this session. In the spirit of the fifth tradition, to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during this session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. Please don't tamper with the equipment. Okay. Will you please join me in opening the session with a serenity prayer? Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The essay purpose. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. Our panelists for this session are me, except we're not a panel. Okay, I'm Rita. I've already said that. And Mike will share his story in a minute. Okay. I'm going to title this sponsorship, not how to be a sponsor, because I haven't achieved how to tell you how to do it. I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I've realized in the 9.5 years that I've been in SA, that's really all I can do. I'm a teacher, and so I had to be really careful not to look up everything and come and teach you out of the books. You can read the books, just like I had to read the books. But this is a person recovery. It's a one-on-one. It's a fellowship. And I had to learn that because I couldn't just sit at home and read the literature and then go out and be sober or go out and know how to interact with people. Because SA for me is an intimacy disorder, just learning how to interact with people, how to have compassion. That wasn't one of my biggest character assets was compassion. So even though I was living this double life, I didn't want anybody else to have problems and tell me about them. So I've had to grow in compassion and mercy in my program. And they say to lead with our weakness, lead with our story. So my story and my forms of acting out were lusting and wanting to be lusted after. Promiscuity before I got married. Then after I got married, I didn't do that, but I lived in fantasy and in the lust. And then 10 years ago in my marriage, I had an affair. And many things led up to that. And I just couldn't live with myself any longer. And I remember sitting in my therapist's office. And so somewhere out of the blue, she said, "Well, at least you haven't had an affair." And I looked at her. She said, "You have." So I shook my head. She said, "You are." So the therapy changed after that, and she told me about this program and that I needed to go. And I started, actually, my first 12-step for SA was a step meeting, and I started in a step study. So my first sponsor, I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, "Well, I don't really work those steps, but you're welcome to call me." Well, she was the only person I could call, so I called her. And, you know, somehow in God's grand design, it worked out. I got sober, I stayed sober, and found another sponsor. Eventually. But, you know, when I first came in, I remember somebody who I was in a conference with last year, and he said, "I remember you. I remember when you first started coming to meetings. You were angry." And I'm like, "Oh, really? Did you see that smoke coming out of my ears and fire out of my eyes?" So God knew that I guess I just needed somebody to listen and help me process, because there is healing in the listening. And then my next sponsor, she was a step worker. So I went from somebody who just listened and, yeah, to, okay, come over to my house Saturday, block out 4 hours, and we're going to work these steps. And I did, and we worked them, and she was the biggest help to me, and then she relapsed. For 2 years, she was out there. And I was looking for another sponsor, and for those of us who are women in this room, all three of us, it's kind of hard to find a woman sponsor. So I kept going to meetings, and my next sponsor was Ms. Grace and Compassion. She just, you know, write your positive list about yourself, your character assets, your things. And so I was thinking, well, I like that. But I needed somebody to help me stay in the steps because, like I said, when I came in, I wasn't kind of ingrained in that, so I had to learn to go back to the steps. And so she relapsed after she was my sponsor for a while. So I realized that really this is a program of grace, compassion, and action. And last night, the lady who was speaking said, pray for others what you want for yourself. And I've heard that over and over, but I realize as a sponsor, that's what I need too. I want acceptance. I want to be cared for, but I need guidance. I need guidance. In my own head, I thought I had it all figured out anyway. I'm really smart. I can read and, you know, give me a list and I'll do it. But I needed guidance on how to do it and when I needed some correction. And then also when I needed grace, because there is both. There's the grace and the truth side, but that's what sponsorship is for me. And I think the original title of this session was How to Be a Sponsor. So I can't tell you that, but I can tell you what I needed and what people have done for me. And I have a group of accountability women in this program that I meet with every Tuesday. And we do hold each other accountable. I've been sober 9.5 years. The first year, like I said, I stayed angry the whole time. I was too angry to act out. So it wasn't really the shame, it was the anger. And then the second year, I started, you know, coming to myself and realizing, I think I have a problem. And then the third year, and when I read in the white book about that it takes time, I didn't like that. It's like, no, like the ladies shared last night in the Essanon program. 12 weeks, 12 steps, it's over. Well, I thought, okay, I really do have a problem, so we'll do the 12 steps in 12 months. Okay, so week by week, month by month, I kept going to meetings. I started going to mixed meetings. We have some really great meetings here in Nashville. And started taking on sponsees. So I found myself doing what I had been led to do. At first, I was just a really good listener. I would listen and just, they would talk, and then I'd hang up and get mad at them. Because they just were dumping on me. Okay, so then I took the other approach. We are working the steps. How does this apply to your life? How does the program apply to your life? What step are you on? So I wouldn't even really let them talk to me because I was telling them what to do. Well, I like that. You know, I grew up doing that. I can tell you what to do. So in my sponsoring, I have learned how to have both, how to be a good listening ear, and also how to point them back to the program. And I don't do that every time I get a phone call. And I also had to learn boundaries for myself. I have 3 grown daughters, and they have watched me grow up in recovery because they had to grow up watching me and having a mom in recovery. And by the way, my marriage did make it through 2 in-house separations, 1 out-of-house, or if you're from the South, an outhouse separation. But we kept just doing the next right thing. And that's one of the biggest nuggets of gold that I've received in my program is there are a lot of things we can do. There are a lot of meetings you can go to. There's a lot of literature you can read. There's so many instructions. But when life is overwhelming at that moment, do the next right thing, which could be eat. Take a nap. I remember one of my sponsors saying, what can you do to take care of yourself right now? Do you need a nap? I'm like, oh, but I need to work. And I mean, I was going to 5 meetings a week and making phone calls and taking phone calls. And in doing, and I thought, okay, I've done stuff my whole life. I just need to work my program and let God be the leader of my program. It is a spiritual program. And so step 11 is one of my favorite steps, praying only for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry it out. There are many times I feel I know what God's will is, but then I'm too afraid to do it. And New Year's Day, you know, it's the holidays. We know it's hard for those of us who are addicts. So I got 4 phone calls New Year's Day. And then I was finished. That was all the emotions I had. It was all the time I had. And so then that evening, one of my sponsees called, just desperate. And she left a message, and I didn't call her back. And in the past, I wouldn't have done that. I would have picked up that phone, taken time away from my husband. It wouldn't have been God's will for me. Because in our program, the sponsor is not the one who rescues or heals or even helps you get well. We are part of the program. Sponsoring, going to meetings. Well, first of all, trusting in God, that surrender thing. And so I called her back the next day and I said, I'm sorry I didn't get back with you last night. I just didn't have time. And in the past, if somebody would have told me that, I would have thought, I'm such a bother. She didn't have time. She didn't have time for me. Me, oh no. And so as a sponsor, I've had to learn to trust God with my sponsees. At one time, I've had up to 8 sponsees. I'm not saying that was God's will. I'm just saying I felt sorry for the people, for the women. They come in. I go. My home group is a Tuesday night meeting for women only. And then I feel sorry because I know what it's like to not have anybody to call and to be desperate. And so I'll say yes and then go home and go, what have I done? I don't know. And so I'm learning now to say, well, I can be a temporary sponsor or I can't sponsor you, but please call me. Because for me, there's a spiritual transaction of just receiving phone calls, being able to point them to the steps, and then making the commitment of saying sponsor. Because you are committing to that person some time, some emotional energy, prayers. I pray for my sponsees in the morning. And so I've had to learn, and I've had to let some sponsees go because we just outgrew each other. It wasn't that they had done anything bad or wrong or that I had done anything bad or wrong, but sometimes we outgrow each other. And I'd sponsored a girl for 3 years and then didn't hear from her. And then I saw her a few months later and she'd gotten another sponsor. And you know, the thing is, I knew our season was up and I didn't know how to tell her. So if I would have been a little more in tune and a little more brave on that step 11, the power to carry out God's will, I would have said, you know, I have just really enjoyed being your sponsor. We have, connected, but I think this season is over. I don't like the word firing your sponsor or firing your sponsee. I've had enough rejection in my life, and I think most of us in this room probably have. So I have learned in the program to be careful with my words because I love to talk, and once I get talking, it's kind of like an addiction. I can just keep on, and I need the T-shirt help. I'm started talking, and I can't shut up. So tell me when my 15 minutes is up. So just learning boundaries as a sponsor, that has been the biggest thing for me. My daughters know where I am this morning. And I said, I'm going to be speaking a little bit on sponsorship. And of all things, this has been the most challenging part of my program because I have felt like a failure. There have been months and months where I didn't have a sponsor. And then I'm feeling guilty because I'm sponsoring people, but I don't have a sponsor and I couldn't find one. And so just knowing that I can make those phone calls. So my daughter said, well, Mom, you've learned good boundaries with your sponsoring. I thought if that's one thing that my daughter saw from the beginning of taking every phone call, of anybody who called, to taking the ones I could, to knowing that there are times in a day that I don't take any because I can't. So being able to say that email is great, but I'm a voice person. But I've actually learned email can actually be a lot quicker. If somebody's really in need and they can email me pages on email, I can read it, pray, send a quick one back and say, we'll talk in a couple of days or tomorrow or whatever. I travel a lot, so I'm out of town. And so just learning that doesn't make me a bad person because I can't help someone. And so one of the ladies that I'm sponsoring was in a crisis. And so I didn't call her back. I did pray for her. And when she called back, or when I called her back the next day, I said, I'm really sorry I couldn't call you back. I thought about you. I said a prayer for you. I hope you know that in the fellowship there are other people, because I love a vision for you, our reading. We are on this road of destiny together, happy destiny. And so she said, well, you know, I got to thinking, I needed to call somebody else anyway. If I couldn't get in touch with you, I needed to call someone else because I just needed to talk anyway. And that's great. That's what we need to realize as sponsees and as sponsors. There are times that people can't be there for us, and it's not about us not being worthy or them not liking us. It's life. Life is busy. We're all addicts. We're addicts. I had one girl call me. I didn't call her back for 5 days because each day that went by, I started feeling guiltier. So then I was like, when I call her back, I've got to apologize. Oh, no. So I waited 5 days and called her and said, you know what? I'm an addict. My addict kicked in for 5 days, then shame and guilt, and so I didn't call you back, and I'm sorry. And that's all I could offer her. Well, that's fine. That's all I had. We can only give what we have. Also, I do not sponsor people who do not go to meetings because all I am is an unpaid therapist. I tell people who call me, call other people too. I can't be your only person because you might call me on a day that I'm having a bad day and I'm going to give you some really bad advice. Okay? Call other people. Of course, then there's that balance of you don't call 10 different people till you get to hear what you wanted to hear either. It's like, okay, I didn't like that. Okay, that one worked. So I sponsor people who go to meetings. I sponsor people who call other people. Sometimes that's not easy. But somebody sent me a great email on sponsoring. So I was like, you know, what am I going to speak on? And then he's like, you know, share your experience, strength, and hope. But there comes a time when you can say, I really can't be your sponsor. The program that you are working is not a program that fits for me. And their program could be working for them, even if we don't understand that. But the program you're working isn't one that fits for me. So I'll be glad to receive your phone calls, but I can't be your sponsor. Sounds really good standing up here, but when I have to go home and make that phone call, that's not easy. But it's true. There comes a line that we can be some people's friends, but when we're sponsoring someone, we're not just their friend. And I know there are some hardliners that don't even cross that line of friendship. Well, I'm a woman, and I've got some codependent issues, so most of the time I become friends with my sponsees, and that's fine. And then there are times when I place principles above personalities, that I personally don't enjoy some people's personalities, but the principle of, can I just share a few minutes today with this person what I received, what the gift that has been given to me. So one of the things that I want to end with is when someone calls me and it's chaos and it might not even be about their acting out, it's about, you know, a spouse, a child, a situation at work, I can say, how do the steps fit into this situation? How is your program going to work in this life? Because that is step 12. Step 12, we practice these principles in all our affairs. So learning to point people back to the steps, to the program, and that's what worked for me. Thanks.
Good morning. My name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
And I appreciated some of the things you had to say. Excellent. I'd never thought of, I don't remember just how you phrased it, but the part about in this situation, how can we apply the steps. I've never said that to a sponsee. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. Been sober since February 7th, 2001. I'm from Northwest Pennsylvania. Been through the steps. I'm on my seventh time through them currently. I go through them once a year usually. I skipped a year in there somewhere. A few years ago, guy that some of you may know, Bill S., is my sponsor, and he was actively going back to school, and so he had very little time to work with me. I'd been working with him for about a year and a half or so, I suppose, by then. What happened was is that in the process of him being less available than usual, I found another guy that he had given me some CD tapes of. He was AA. And so I contacted this guy, and he was very gracious in the fact that he was willing to talk with me, but he wouldn't work with me because I was an alcoholic. And so I could appreciate that. But like I say, he was very willing to talk anytime I wanted to call him. There was no problem with that. So in the process, at 2 years sober, I decided that having not had that spiritual experience, though I had worked through the steps and hadn't acted out for 2 years, that we talk about in the 12th step, having not experienced that, my life was the farthest away from lusting and acting out that I'd ever been, but it was the most unsatisfactory for me as well. And so it seemed very reasonable to me at the time that the appropriate response to that was to end my life. And so I had laid out for a number of days. I drove this one interstate, and we live in a snow belt area. I drove the interstate, and I picked out the spot that I was convinced was going to be the right spot that I could drive off of the interstate and I would be able to end my life. Now, it was very convenient that on the day of my second sobriety birthday, we had a terrible snowstorm. I'm finding myself driving excessively fast down the interstate, waiting so that I can find just that spot that I'd picked out so that I could end my life, because life was that miserable for me. At the very last moment, I chose not to do that. I got off the interstate at the next exit, and I called Bill. My sponsor wasn't available. Talked to him a couple of days later. I called this guy named Dave, and he said to me, "Do you want to go through the steps? I'll take you through them." "Yeah, I'm dying here," almost literally. And so he started taking me through the steps, and I had what I would call a spiritual experience. I had for years contemplated all of the terrible things that I could do to my father, who I blamed for all of my problems. Certainly there was a lot of other people, but he was the major one. And so we started working through the steps. And what I found was is that there was a day that came, and I opened up my book and started to do my 10th and 11th step, and I couldn't read the words because I was crying, weeping so much that I couldn't see through the tears. And so I closed the books up, put them aside, the tears dried up, and everything was okay. Went and got the books a little later, the tears came. I did this for probably 5-6 days, and so I was called Dave, and I called him in Dallas at his house. I called him at his cell phone. I called him on his home phone. His mother lives in Washington, D.C. area. I called her there to see if I could track him down. Well, the guy was out of the country. He's a pilot, and so he was flying. 5 or 6 days after all this is going on, and every day the same effect. Open up the books, start to do my prayers and meditations. The tears come, I can't see the words. Every day I get a little more frustrated. And what I found was is that I started to have, in that weeping, a sense of deep love for my father again. It was a very healing experience for me. Hadn't seen my dad in like 25, 30 years at that time. And so that was a great experience for me. 6 years later, I find myself standing here in front of you guys and gals, and life is good today. Let me do a couple of things. In a vision for you, it says that we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. And it goes on to say, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. And I'll stop there with that. Working with a sponsee, when Rita and I were introduced to each other, she looked at me and said, he's your sponsor. That's not the softer, easier way. And that's true. And when I look at, I have two sponsors, one in AA then, and he makes my SA sponsor look like a mild pussycat. He's really sweet. So I didn't pick soft, easy guys. Why? Because I'm aggressive, I am hard-nosed, I'm stubborn, I'm egotistical, and I needed somebody that could help me with that. And so I found two men in the whole world that were capable of doing that for me. So I've got these two guys, and they've worked with me for a number of years now. Then I have a fellow come up and ask me to sponsor him. I had a guy do this 2 weeks ago tomorrow at a meeting. He asked me to be a sponsor. And one of the guys that I know for years that was in the fellowship way before I came in just stood over there and chuckled. And I looked over at Charlie and said, what are you chuckling about? He says, well, I'm just glad to know that he's going to be able to hear the program. So let me give you a couple of definitions. I looked these up on the internet in a dictionary. Sponsor or a mentor, it talks about. That's a person who assumes responsibility for another person during a period of instruction or apprenticeship or probation. Okay, so what is my responsibility as a sponsor? I believe it is to teach the guy or gal that has been put in my care about what it is that I found in recovery, of working, how to work the 12 steps and have a spiritual experience. The 12th step tells me that having had a spiritual experience, excuse me, as the result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to sexaholics. So my belief is that as I work through these steps and as I start to work with sponsees, that it is so that you won't be driving down an interstate thinking about killing yourself. That you will have a power that's greater than yourself that is capable of keeping you sober, that gives you a purpose and a reason for being alive. Now, in the big book, it calls sponsees a protege. So what's a protege or a sponsee? It's a mentorship that refers to a relationship between a more experienced person to help a less experienced person. So I have a responsibility in my view to help the person that has asked me to sponsor him. What's that look like for me? Well, I sit down with a guy right up front, and usually it takes about 45 minutes. I want him to know without a doubt what it is that I'm expecting of him. The first thing I require of him is to take his white book, flip it open, and write something to the effect, and I'm willing to allow him some flexibility here, and it needs to say something about, I will go to any length to get and stay sober. I want you to sign it and date it. The reason I do that is because one of these days, he is going to say to me, well, I don't think I need to do that. How many people are sponsoring people in here? Well over half. Okay. You heard that before, huh? Or something to that effect. Or you've maybe said it. I have. And I hadn't written it down for my sponsors, but I was reminded of it. I was reminded of, well, how's that work for you? So we start out with that. Now, I believe that we have what I call a window of opportunity, a small period of time. I wish I could tell you how long it is, but I can't. I don't know. But do you remember the last person that you saw come into the fellowship? I don't remember how you said something about it. What was on fire, did you say? Your hair was on fire?
My eyes are on fire and I smoke out.
There, okay. But you know, when we come into the fellowship, we are desperate. We're willing to do anything, right? Now, it's at that point that I believe that a sponsee is pliable and that you can get the most benefit, the biggest bang for your buck, so to speak. It's at that time that he's willing to do anything. He'll go to any lengths to get and stay sober. He just wrote it in his book. So I'm going to tell him what it is that I'm going to expect. I'm going to expect you to write out first step. I'm going to expect you to sit down and tell that first step to me and then to the group. I'm going to expect you to look at how much this has cost you. I can tell you that I spent 3.5 years of my life in a fantasy land, non-sexual. I can tell you of reading books, magazines, television, things like that. I can tell you that I spent 4.5 years of my life in a fantasy land of acting out sexually, 24/7. I can tell you I spent well in excess of $135,000 on my addiction because we sit down and my sponsor had me try to the best of my ability to figure out what things cost. I can tell you that I stole in excess of $75,000 of that to do that. Those things tell me that when I logically think about it, that I am abnormal compared to some of the people out in the rest of the world. I can tell you that I spent most of that money on either pornography or prostitutes. I gave my wife an STD. Most normal, relatively normal people don't do those types of things. So I expect those things, and I tell him that story. Second step, for you that were in this room earlier this morning, you heard a little bit about the second step and about prayer and meditation. I take them through the second step, and I tell them a little bit about the fact that we're going to look at powerful people in our lives and talk about some of those. I take them through the third step, and I tell them about the fact that you're going to make a decision and that you're going to make a decision to turn your role in your life over to the care of God as you understand him, the third step. And that right after that, between the third and fourth step, it says in the big book that having made this decision, it will have little lasting effect if at once not followed by a thorough house cleaning. Now, that is where they always balk. I certainly did. I got lazy and complacent because I'd never felt as good as I did after I got to my third step. I tell him that that's when I'm going to kick him in his rear to get him motivated again, that it is a time that he is going to need some strong encouragement because he will feel good at that point, he will think that he's arrived, and he won't want to go further in working the program. Then I talk to him about steps 5. Oh, geez, step 4 you're going to write out, step 5 you're going to come to my house. You don't have an option. You will come to my house. We will sit down. You may or may not be want to stay the night before or after. That's up to you. But I can tell you that I had to fly to my sponsor's home, which was down in South Carolina at the time, and I spent 13.5 hours doing my fifth step. I don't expect yours to take any less. So don't schedule any time. You will be tired and exhausted when you're done. You might want to consider staying at my house overnight afterward. They always look at you and, oh, yeah, that's no problem. Until the day that we get to set up the appointment for them wanting to do the fifth step. And I had a guy a while back who had made this commitment to me who somewhere around 4 o'clock he had to leave because he had another appointment. That wasn't part of the deal. I try to the best of my ability to hold the guys that I work with accountable. Okay. Now, having said all those things, we'll skip forward. I believe that the whole program is based around having that spiritual experience and that I need, as a sponsor, to take responsibility. Now, I cannot get and keep myself or any of you sober. Can't do that. tried to do that. It didn't work for me, and I can't have never been able to succeed at getting any of my sponsees sober. But I can ask specific questions, and my experience has been is that the longer I've been around, now maybe it's just that I'm starting to hear these stories and they've always been there, but I hear more and more stories about guys that are starting to act out in the fellowship who have been telling us that they've been sober. They've been lying to us in meetings, and I'm hearing more and more about that. Well, one of the things that I made a commitment after a situation that happened in our area a few months ago is that I'm tired of that. I'm tired of working with guys who don't want to get and stay sober. And I believe that what happens is that it always starts with a thought in my mind. If I'm going to have a slip, it's going to start with me thinking that I can handle this. So one of the things I've started doing more and more of is being much more confrontational in the fact, are you sober? Okay. What does sobriety mean? Give me a definition. I want to know what the definition is because we as addicts can play games with those words. You know, early on, having two sponsors, I tried to play the game of I'd call Bill up, I'd tell him what was going on, he'd tell me what to do. I'd call Dave up in Dallas, and I would tell him what was going on, failing to mention that I'd talked to Bill already, and find out what, and I would weigh which one is going to be the easiest one here. You know, what I found was is that if we're all working the same program with the same literature, these guys were never disagreeing with each other. Now, they didn't always have the same way of attacking the problem. But what I found was is that when I'd call up Bill, he'd say, do this, this, and this, 3 points. I'd call up Dave, and he'd start at 3, and he'd say, do this, this, and this. Oh, darn. I didn't like that. I tried to manipulate these guys. It didn't work because they were both long-term sobriety. Both of them were working out the same literature. And so it's I found that I need to be addressing what it is that's going on. I talked to guys today, my sponsees, about what's your spiritual life look like. Had a guy recently say to me, well, I've been going to church every week. Okay. What's your spiritual life look like? Well, I go to meetings twice a week. Okay. You know, and it's like pulling teeth. It's, what's your spiritual life look like? I don't know what you mean, Mike. Your spiritual life? You know, when you're away by yourself, alone, what's it look like between you and God? Oh. Well, I'm not sober. Oh. I've known that for months. I knew that 4 months ago. Why didn't you call me? Because I'm scared. Oh. I'll stop with that. I think I've talked plenty long. We've got about 20 minutes or so here to for some questions, or you can come up and give us some comments of some of your experience. And don't touch the mic. They're real funny about that. Okay, we'll open it up to anybody there.
Hi, I'm Robert. I'm a sex addict. I just have a question. My character defects include being very controlling, very manipulative. How do you manage that? How do you manage not being one more abuser in your sponsee's life?
Well, for me, I've been accused of being a practicing psychiatrist without a license. I have certainly been accused of trying to be a sponsee's dad. I don't intentionally do that. Can I be controlling? Yeah, sure, I can. Absolutely. That's certainly part of my character defects and my personality to be a like that. Both of my sponsors can be that, too. I intentionally looked for those guys because I needed somebody with more of a strong will than I had. If I'm not the right person to sponsor you, That's okay. Find somebody that is. Find somebody that can take you through the steps, help you to get that spiritual experience and move on. If I'm too controlling for you, hey, I know numbers of guys. I have a sponsee who just, he is hardcore. He works the steps hard. He knows the work. He has got long-term sobriety now. And he has a gentleness that I desperately wish I had. That's not Mike. There's thousands of us out there. You don't have to have a guy like that if that's your choice. But for some of us, I desperately needed somebody like that. Somebody that was going to kick me. Dave tells me, and he can do it. I'm going to kick you in your ass so hard that you're going to jump clear off the chair. And he does that through the telephone from 700 miles away for me.
My name is Ted. I'm a sexaholic. First of all, thank you for your words. I got so much out of those few minutes. It was really incredible. One of the things that I've tried to do when people come to me and ask me to be their sponsor is I automatically say we're going to set up a 30-day temporary sponsorship so that I have a window, and the person, also the sponsee, has a window where that conversation you were talking about that's so difficult to have, we can have it. It's already in the program. We know 30 days from now, whenever we started, that we're going to sit down and say, wait a minute, now that you found out that I'm really not the guy you thought I was, and I find out you're not the guy you thought you that I thought you were, well, do we really want to go forward with this thing? Do we have that relationship that I also believe is very important, where we can talk about things in a certain way? I mean, I'm not always, as a matter of fact, I'm almost never in a good mood. So, I mean, how's that going to, you know... I'm really not that guy you saw standing up there. Oh, wow, he's fabulous. No, I'm not. I'm this, you know, you call me in the morning, and guess what? It's the morning, and I'm busy, and I got a million things to do. How are you going to react when I tell you, I'll call you later? And then I forget for 2 hours or 4 hours or a day. So I build in that 30-day window at the beginning, and it allows me, and it's the sponsee's responsibility to remind me of the 30 days. You got to sit down. And I also give them, much like you do, Mike, there's rules from the beginning. You have to be, rule number one is you have to be rigorously honest with me no matter what. I don't care what, I don't care how, you must be honest. And then there are, you know, three or four other things that they have to do. Because I know when I came into this program, my biggest difficulty was I had a sponsor and he used to tell me things and I said, you're crazy. You know, why are you asking me to do those things? And he did exactly what you said. He said, but wait a minute, you said you'd go to any length. And I'd give in, and finally I learned, that's the secret here. I got to give up control. I've got to stop being in charge. And that's the other challenge for me as a sponsor. I have to mentor this person without taking my character defect and transferring it to him and putting myself in such control that it then becomes me acting out my addiction through him. So that's another challenge for me. Just thought I'd share that. Thanks.
I'm Fred. I'm a sexaholic. Thank you very much for everyone who's spoken. This is very illuminating. One of the things I am learning from this is I'm also a teacher in part-time and a mental health professional. And at the end of every class, you know, at the end of the semester, I say to the students, what have you gotten out of this and what would you like to see happen in another course? I do not do that with my sponsees. I probably ought to. Probably someone who wanted a really rigorous, hard-driving sponsor would not choose me because I don't, I'm not a drill sergeant. It's just not who I am. I allow people to call me and come to me. I've never fired anyone. I have about 9 people on my roster, and about 4 of them I've known for long enough that they don't call, but occasionally they will call up and we will have breakfast and we will talk about their program. I've just never had occasion to fire anybody. If there's somebody who asks me to be his sponsor and I feel that that person would be too much for me, I will say to them, I'll be a program buddy, but I don't think I can be your sponsor. I have had 3 sponsors in this program, and one went psychotic. He was a lovely sponsor. Another lost his sobriety. And then for 10 years, I had this wonderful man who I called several times a week and I got so much from him. And every time I called him, he would give me a framework from the program as to how to think about that particular predicament. And it was so helpful. I would write things down that he said to me, and I still have them. And he and I read over them. He had to back out about a year ago because of health problems, so he let me go. And it was just so difficult because I really, really learned a lot from him. At the very same time in my life, I had a watercolor instructor whom I learned so much from, who retired. And then the guy who taught me tennis, who moved to Miami. And I thought, this is very interesting. These are three people in my life from whom I learned so much, and they're going. It must mean that my higher power is sending me to a different position. I must be going to a new place. So I have a sponsor now who is very wise, and I'm trying to get to know him and how he works. One of the things I offer people who come to me is every single day I work all the steps. I start on my knees with the Lord's Prayer, and then with my head on the floor, I do the first three steps in terms of how I'm going to work them that day. And then I do the rest of the steps in terms of how what my character defect is that day, and I make a commitment to work the steps. I pray for all my sponsees. I pray for all my program buddies. I pray for the lineage of my sponsors. I think of it as a lineage. I pray for all those who've left. People over the years, there's about 10 people now over the years whom I've really liked so much who have left the program. And I had a sobriety date of 11 years about a month ago, and I called all of them and said, would you think of me on this day? You know, it wasn't, you don't have to come to the meeting, but I hold them in my heart. So that's in general what I do, and I try to give that practice to people who come to me. They don't have to do it, but I just tell them, this is what I do and this is what's useful to me. And I try to give them what my wonderful sponsor gave to me. So thank you for listening.
Does anyone have any questions? Not that we have all the answers, but we... Yes? Yeah.
You don't ask here?
If you wouldn't mind coming to the mic. Thanks.
I'm Andrew, sexaholic. I got two questions about sponsorship. One is, one of the problems I run into when I talk with sponsees, and some of this may originate from my own spirituality or maybe some small resentment, but one of the things that I've noticed is a lot, sometimes the sponsees immediately want to turn towards what's going on with me when I get on the phone with them. And for some reason I find that a little bit difficult to deal with, how to get back on their program. Then another question, both of those are questions basically, what do you do in that situation to kind of get back? And then the other second question is, what do you, I guess advice on this would be, what do you do with lust when it comes to discussing your own lust with sponsees? Because there are, you know, there's times when I'll, some of the guys that I sponsor are, you know, I've been in the program with and have shared, you know, basically all my details. And so, you know, my sponsor now, you know, doesn't discuss his lust, and you know, it's, the agreement is basically, you know, he has his person to go to, and he's my person to go to. So, my second question basically is on lust. Where do you go with that with a sponsee? How much do you use the sponsee, you know, to surrender lust? Is that okay, or is the preference, you know, to keep that for outside entities? So, somebody wants to answer that.
Thank you. I know if I'm working with someone on the steps and we have a set time that we're talking about the steps, working on the steps, and that is an appointment, kind of like what Mike has already said. And then there are times when I'm taking phone calls, if I know I only have a few minutes, when I pick up, I say hello, and they're like, hello, this is so-and-so, which usually I know because their number's in my caller ID. But I'll say, you know, I only have 5 or 10 minutes, but I did want to say hi to you and see how you are. And then that way they know up front, okay, this isn't a chit-chat. Let's talk for 10 minutes and get the nerve up and then tell me what you need to say. This way, okay, I have 5 or 10 minutes. Tell me what you're thinking, feeling, what's going on. And then we can talk about that. And I say, okay, well, it sounds like let's do steps 1, 2, 3 around that. So for me, that's important to give that boundary up front for them also, because I know when I make phone calls sometimes, I'm scared and I'm a little nervous. And so I start by going, how you doing? How was your Christmas? How was New Year's? What did you do? Did you go out of town? Do whatever. Instead of, hey, you know, this is what happened. And for a lot of people, it's hard to even get to that, what we're trying to say. So it's not a horrible character defect. It could be a personality trait. So I do believe in what we've heard earlier, that we are mentors and that we are guides. We're also helping people focus in on what they're feeling and what is going on right then instead of all of the around here. Because, you know, most of the time I live the around here. So what was the other question? About the lust. Right. Personally, I know to lead with my weakness helps, but it doesn't mean going into great detail what I struggled with that day and that week and all of that, because that's what my sponsor and my accountability people are for. But also to let the person I'm talking to know, okay, I am still an addict just because I've been sober however many years, days, weeks. I'm still an addict and I still struggle. So I think there's a balance in individual phone calls for me, knowing what to say, how much to share, and then also to know, okay, I can share this at a meeting or I can share this on the phone with my sponsor. So I don't think I have to hide what I'm going through, but I also think there's a time to know how much to share.
Well, for myself, both of my sponsors are 700 plus miles away. I see my SA sponsor every 6 months to a year or so. Sometimes it'll be longer. I've seen my AA guy that I work with, my sponsor there, once in almost 7 years. That's a bit of a problem for me. So I find that I have some of the most long-term sobriety in my region, and so I oftentimes try to instill to the guys that are in the fellowship with me that I have problems, that I struggle. Do I struggle with lust? Yeah, sure. Do I struggle with lust as much as I did 8 years ago? No, for sure not. Most of my problems are resentments and fears. Fear drives me almost all of the time. That's the thing that's the driving force. I remember one day at an end of a meeting, I asked these guys in my home group to start to hold me a little more accountable. And one of my sponsees finally spoke up and he said, Mike, he said, I think I can speak for everybody here. We'd feel uncomfortable doing that. So I drive almost 80 miles to a meeting down in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because those guys aren't intimidated. They're more than happy to tell me what I'm doing wrong. Now, what I'm finding, though, is that having cultivated that experience and sharing some of my weaknesses and shortcomings with some of these guys, is that while most of my sponsees haven't been very comfortable holding me accountable, some of my sponsees are more than happy to. I've got a couple that love to do that. So I find that that I have to certainly weigh that, but that leading with my top plate, if you will, is beneficial to me most of the time. And what was the other question? Or did I?
How much we share?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, okay. Anybody else?
There's one more.
Time. Rita, Mike, thanks so much for your share. This is the third time I've been in the program. The first time I got into a program, it was an SA. I was going through a real traumatic divorce. The second time, I realized I had a real serious sex addiction. By the way, my name is Mike. I'm a sexaholic. My question is, I've been in the program 11 months. I've got 9 weeks of sobriety. At what point, based on your experiences with your sponsees, do you feel a sponsee should consider becoming a sponsor, that it does not take away from their recovery program and working their steps and their sobriety? There's got to be a point at which a person's ready and when they're not ready, and that's really the question.
I don't know if you've ever noticed, but there's lots of Mikes in the fellowship. We're a sick group of people. When are you ready? Let me ask this. Have you been asked to sponsor somebody sponsor?
I've been challenged by my sponsor to consider it. I'm
okay.
Backing off. I'm very selfish.
Okay. Well, my sponsor encouraged me to start looking for sponsees when I got to my ninth step. And the reason for that is that our book tells us that we start to act like normal people. We started to have a spiritual experience. We just got done with going through the promises out of the ninth step, and it says that sanity will have returned to us in the tenth step. Ah, maybe I'm starting to become a little more normal. I've started to have that psychic change. I started to have that spiritual experience. So I encourage guys to do that. I don't think that I necessarily put so much a time frame on it as I do an experiential time frame to it. The other thing is that just because I'm willing to take somebody on doesn't mean that anybody sees anything in me that they want. My sponsor told me to start getting ready to do that. My ninth step, it was probably, and for me, I finished all step 5 through 12 in a weekend. So when I left him after doing my ninth step, other than doing the physical amends, I was pretty much done with the step work. But it was probably 6 months or more. The guys around me wanted to see if what I was talking and what I was doing was the same thing. So,
anybody else?
I appreciate hearing so much about the spiritual experience. That's a very important part of our program because we are a spiritual program, even though we're not a religious program. And my sponsor was pretty hardcore on working these steps, and I wasn't really familiar with AA, and she's a big book AA person, and I came in doing, you know, the white book, so she helped me get some basic footing in the big book on sponsorship, on working the program. And until we surrendered everything, half measures availed us nothing. I've heard many times in these rooms that, well, I'm not doing the bottom line. I'm sober according to our bottom line. I'm not having sex with self, and I am not having sex outside of my marriage. And for me, though, sobriety is the spiritual part. You know, are you still contacting your affair partner? Are you still drawn to pornography? Are you still doing all the things that our thoughts bring about actions? And so I was very challenged to see where I was in my spiritual program working the steps, because if I'm really working the steps, I'm not doing all these things that lead to the big acting out. But I was challenged a lot of times with my acting in and then with my pre-acting out. So for me, being sober means working the program all the way, that until I did, the result was nil. And so I think in sponsoring that we need to be emotionally sober as well as just not doing that bottom line. And that's hard for me to say because I'm the, you know, grace, compassion person, but I've been around these rooms long enough to me come in and be emotionally distraught, and also to see people coming in that are sober for a while and then not, and then sober and then not. And the reason is we've got to be honest, we've got to be open, and we've got to be willing. And willing was the hardest one for me. That was I willing to really do anything that it took? So that would be what I encourage everyone here, as Mike has already said, you know, write it down in your white book, and then when it gets hard and you just think you have to do the pre-acting out, which for me would have been acting out, that it's not worth it. I'm so grateful for our program directors who put the prayers in this. Since I wasn't a big book reader until about 2 years after I got into recovery, people kept talking about, oh, the seven-step prayer and the third-step prayer. I'm like, where do you find these? I was waiting to have them listed out. Well, I didn't know. I had to read the whole big book to find them. So be grateful. They have helped us. So here are the prayers and meditations front page. The promises are on the back page. The slogans have helped me in those critical moments of, you know, live and let live, think. How important is it? I didn't even know where the slogans were. I'm like, well, somebody tell me what I'm supposed to be reading. So they're in there. Ask somebody. And in sponsoring, that has helped me to just have that quick bullet prayer or the quick slogan. I think that really helped me. Okay, it is 9 o'clock, so we need to end on time. So how many of you have your things? Because I would actually like to do the third step prayer. Okay, if you would stand. Anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. Let's close with the third step prayer. Prayer. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
I appreciate your sharing.
And I did yours, too. You had some excellent thoughts. I appreciate that. I find...
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're a good sponsor.
Well, I have some guys that disagree with that.
When do you...